Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Global Village Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host Doug Bentley. Tonight, author, poet, and musician Thomas Lane, whose first novel, The Karma Factor, explores the boundaries of human consciousness that takes the reader on a thrilling ride with character James Early as an NYPD detective who comes to the conclusion that he must end his life as a safe haven from his personal demons. The Karma Factor is a great read by contrasting elements of grit, suffering, and magic, and is fundamentally a book about hope and, for many, a new way to see life. Join us as our author guest Thomas Lane discusses his book, his life, and his art. Now, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I have a special guest tonight. You're going to enjoy this show. This is an amazing man who's written a book that's going to be a thriller. It's mixing real-life situations, the book of fiction, of course, but it's a book that's based on his personal life and background. He's a very interesting man, and we're going to get to the interview right away as we talk about the theme in this good versus evil in this book, that it's interlacing past lives with present on a hero's quest for redemption. It goes into city detectives and elusive serial killer with a visionary monk suggesting in an abandoned or sort of sequestered in an abandoned monastery in Tibetan Himalayas. It's full of suspense. We're going to talk to Thomas Lane, author of The Karma Factor. Joining me tonight is my good friend and co-host, Doug Bentley. Welcome to the show, Doug. I hope you're looking forward to what Thomas Lane has to say about this exciting book, the same as me. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you very much. I am definitely looking forward to it.
Okay.
Me too.
Okay. Doug is the co-host and he's a good friend of mine, and he's a very well-read man indeed. You know, the background sort of is, we'll get to that in a minute, but the this particular man has had an amazing life. He's an author, a poet, and a musician. He debuts his first novel, The Karma Factor. It's a work of visionary fiction exploring the boundaries of human consciousness against the backdrop of a classic suspense thriller. Wow, I can hardly wait to know more about it. With a purpose that transcends the genre, Lane expertly waves the novel's wider message in a groundbreaking white-knuckle ride between worlds as characters set out to make karmic amendments, right wrongs, and reestablish the power of choice. Welcome to the show, author and poet Thomas Lane.
Well, thanks for having me on. That was quite an intro. It was a good thing I was sitting down to hear all that, but I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're looking forward to finding out more about how you wrote this book, what your life has been. And, you know, everybody has this theme in life where they start out in one direction, ups and downs happen, challenges are met in life. You know, we go through this path and somewhere along the line, we kind of get an idea what it's all about. Tell us more about how you came upon this idea to write this amazing book.
Well, thanks. There are many storylines and layers on this thing, as I'm sure everyone's life is. To me, it was just sort of taking the next step. I was raised in a very intellectual family. My dad was Harvard and Yale. My mom was Columbia, a PhD there. My brother was Stanford and PhD there. And then there was me. And I just, I heard a different drummer. I heard a different saxophone and a different kettle drum. And I, you know, I was trying to figure it out from there. What was what was different from my family seemed to work better in the world as I was a kid growing up. The one salvaging factor was that I had a colossal imagination. And I was very happy playing soldiers and sports and stuff in my daily life. And that led me to all kinds of interesting inquiries as sort of my imagination began to encounter Eastern religions. In fact, the earliest encounter with the arts that somehow was exciting to me in the core part of my being was my fourth grade teacher reading The Hobbit. And all of a sudden, coming from sort of cold intellectual qualities, there was this fuzzy little hero who outwit, dragons and dwarfs and such. And that started opening up worlds there. Meanwhile, there was still this regular guy kind of thing with me. I love sports. I love mischief. I love adventure. And those two sort of twin stories, as I was growing up, I was trying to balance the two, the sort of magic and this basically gritty kind of background that I found myself in, particularly when I got involved with the racial situation. My mom was a real advocate for many things, and I began to get into the head and heart space of the black people, and I worked for the American Friends Service Committee, and this was another part of my life. So the desire for social justice, for some kind of latch, spiritual latch, humane latch, and then this quest for adventure all kind of came together when I was becoming very unhappy with the fact that there seemed to be little learning curve in terms of society, that we would repeat the same problems over and over again. And in my humble sort of imaginistic life that I was partly living, the thought was that maybe we were not approaching it from the right area. Maybe there was something called spirits that lived in previous lifetimes, and that there was something called the Akashic Records, which we can get to later if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
All these things blended together for me to want to write something that was full of, it was basically a page-turner action-adventure thing that I could really relate to, because I love noir, and I love the mysterious kind of whodunit kind of storylines. But I also wanted to put in the possibility of a real solution, so that we could actually move forward as a community and as a people. And I came up with this idea of what would happen if, for instance, there was this meeting that took place in the Himalayas, called together by a renegade monk who wanted to explore the soul. Everybody had mentioned the soul for millennia, but nobody seemed to have really gone into it as a scientific, workable phenomena that was at the core of most religions and even many folks that didn't believe in God, but they believed in something that was at the core. And so the idea was that he would bring these folks together, these folks that were mystics and poets and just people who were advanced thinkers, and bring them up to this place in secrecy, in an abandoned monastery in Tibet, and figure out what the heck was really going on and what we could really work with, which is, the human soul and how it worked with its sidekick, what I called karma. And that was the beginning of, okay, this is what I would like to put together. And the story kind of, talked its way into my soul and came out through my fingers. And the book was written many, many times. I started on this thing 27 years ago. and rewrites and movie deals and this and that and whatever. And fairly recently, you know, I came to terms with it, particularly when I felt like there was so much darkness coming around the corner towards all of us with global warming and the politics and diseases and stuff, that we really had to find a new paradigm. And so I, you know, this is a fiction book. I'm no expert. I'm just like everybody else banging around trying to figure the thing out. But I thought maybe that I could make a small contribution if I could get this book published and out. And so sort of having been a bit of a recluse and off-grid for many, many years, I rolled the dice and got the book published, self-published, and started hitting the lines and coming out to talk to great folks like you and saying, here I am, here's the book. I hope it's fun. I hope it's, you know, it's inspiring. And I guess that's my overall answer.
Well, it's an interesting concept. You have this this tough New York City cop, and you're in the landscape of New York, and then you end up in far away the Himalayas in a monastery. No further worlds could be apart than those two. And somehow you've managed to weave this as to your protagonist, NYDP detective, James Early, I guess. What makes him compelling as a character to you? I want to ask about this renegade monk getting everybody together. It sounds like a monk with a temper. I don't know if that goes together. How did you put these things together?
God, that's a really interesting question. Well, I'm a bit skitsy there. I have found opposing forces within my own nature, and somehow I live, you know, I mean, I'm not crazy. I get up in the morning and I shave and I do my thing. I spend most of my day, you know, creating stuff. But they are not, you know, it's heads and tails. It's the same coin. A monk and a serial killer actually share something. But you have to dig way down into these people. And the vehicle I chose was this cop, but this cop who was haunted. He kept, you know, not to give too much of the story away, but he kept having flashbacks, and he didn't know what they were. And it turns out they were from a previous lifetime. And the whole beginning of the story is he's letting go. He's letting go of his sort of temporary fling. He's letting go of his stature as a policeman. He wants to get out. He can't stand it anymore. And behind that, there is the fear that whatever he did, mysteriously, he doesn't know, but he feels it. It's, you know, it's that sense of, I don't know if other folks have it, but there's sometimes I get that sense of guilt that I did something bad. I don't know what it is, you know, but it haunts me. And I really have had times where I wish someone would come up and arrest me and say, okay, you did this and this and this, and you have to go to jail for it. And in a sense, and this is, you know, I am imagining these things.
Of course.
But there's a sense of relief because now I know what I did wrong. Now I know I'm a bad person. And Early, James Early, this detective, is stuck in that moment. And he wants to take himself out. So he has this elaborate plan where he's going to go to a suspect who's running very rough and is toting some kind of machine gun, and they break into his house, and he's setting it up so that he's going to take the bullet. And he launches towards this guy who's got the gun raised, and they both fire, and the bad guy is killed. But Early, the bullets get diverted, and all of a sudden he feels, you know, an arm draped over his body. He looks up. There's pillows. There's feathers flying all over from a machine gun through a pillow.
Wow.
And he's looking around, and he says, "I should be dead. What? And that is the inciting incident in the book. That's what launches him. It says, why have I been saved? What am I supposed to do with this now that I have this moment? And the bullets end up in some place in New Mexico, and there's another hand at play. This is the magic quality. And now he has to figure out what the heck is going on these other levels. And why I like this, because for me, when you have difficult decisions to make, and it's this or that or whatever, and you choose to be accountable, to understand, to confront that, rather than, oh wow, boy, I escaped. I don't know why, but I ain't going back there. No, he says, I'm taking this on, because life has just taken me on, and I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to find out what this is all about, and that is the beginning of his journey.
Well, it's amazing how you've kind of juggled the balls, if you will, between these extremes. And I think that aha wake-up moment is when the policeman has his trauma in his life and all of a sudden things didn't go as they ought to have gone. And then that inward journey starts to take place. Why did this happen? Why didn't it happen?
Mm-hmm.
So as you discussed the personal choices of karmic amendments. How do you personally view the role of karma in our lives, and how is it portrayed in your book?
Again, it's really and again, this is just what I personally have been able to piece together. True or not true, all I can say is what seems to work for me, which is karma is a phenomena that I have no idea, who put it in play or why it's in play. But I know it is in play. I have seen it in my life, and I've watched it in others, which is, it's kind of a cause and a spiritual cause and effect. And I feel, and this is just me, is that it's based on the experience that people are basically good. If you take away all the crap and you remove all the armor and all the poisons, that there will be something that shines there. In all of us, and that becomes the North Star. And as messed up as we can get, there still is functioning. Is that you're actually underneath it all, good guy? You don't wish harm on others. You wish there was another solution, but this is the solution you come up with. So that what's monitoring this thing is when you do something wrong, you want to be awakened. You want it to be held accountable. On some level, you may not even feel it, but I feel it's there, and that you will draw in something that makes you need to be accountable or at least confront the problem, whatever. That's been my experience, and, when I have done something that I don't feel good about, it'll haunt me on some level, and then I'll find something that is telling me to wake up, Lane, because this is coming back. What goes around comes around. What's the thing about what you plant, what you sow, therefore you shall.
What you sow, you reap, yeah.
Yeah, you reap, thank you.
And
that's my personal thing. And in the book, James Early has been saved. Why he's been saved, but then he actually turns to confront it, to look at, and it takes him back in time. It takes him confronting a really, really terrible incident that he was cause over without being malicious cause. He was just something that happened that he was a little bit irresponsible, but the payback was horrific. And so he had to sort of make amends. And in a sense, what he's doing with chasing the serial killer, that becomes part of his amends. That's one way of viewing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that he takes it all the way to the end, risks his life repeatedly.
Well, karma has that purpose, doesn't it? Karma is sort of the process of action and consequence. And
mm-hmm.
The idea is that he has done things previously, and now he's had something go on in his life. And the consequences of that are that he changes his life and goes in a wild direction, totally different than where he was originally, or shall we say, normally thought he would go. And so I think that's what makes this an exciting, intriguing book. Where can people get this? Amazon and other places, your website?
Amazon, for sure. Barnes & Noble, perhaps. You can always go to my website. Thank you for asking. ThomasLane.com. That's the simplicity of it. And it's a sprawling kind of landscape of the book, but then poetry and music and art and other stuff. But it's there, and you can read stuff about it. I've had some reviews. I've had some podcasts. I'd be very pleased if you would like to buy it.
There you go, friends. You can go to those places. More on Thomas Lane. We're going to take a short break in a moment just to give Paul a heads up. You're not only an author, but you're also a poet, a musician, and a painter. And how do these different artistic disciplines inform or improve your writing? Are you somebody that has three different things, three different paintings going, and two or three books written? Or creative people just don't stop, you know?
Well, in my head, it's a traffic jam. My activities, I do have some discipline. When the muses speak, I try to follow, which is why I don't have a career path. I've never had a career path, you know, ever since I was a kid. It was like, find out who you are, and, you know, your job is to become realized as a soul. And I would sell stuff on street corners and wait tables and wash dishes, do anything just to keep me alive so I could live another day as a creator. Things changed later on. But I have just been, when something comes up and the urgency is that, I try to stay directed. When I'm doing the book, when I'm doing a screenplay, when I'm doing a poem, I can stay on that, and I have to tell my muses, shut up, go away, leave me alone. And I'm so fortunate to have that abundance, because it's not always the case. But I've learned to live with them, and I'm so very, very, very fortunate that they're there, and they all feed, one feeds another, because, I mean, what's really going on is that I'm trying to learn about life and myself and people and do the right thing with my skills and attention and not to avoid areas that are problematic for me.
Well, we have people waiting in the queue here in the 914, the 773, the 972. We have a Skype call or two, and we might have some emails here for questions as well. Listen, more when we come back after the break with author Thomas Lane. His book is an amazing book. Although the story revolves around a cop and a serial killer, the book is fundamentally about hope. A hope that understands both bullets and prayers and the path that goes beyond. We'll be right back after this short break.
One of the most poignant topics of discussion in today's world is the evidence of earthly changes and what began as what the media called global warming. Did you know our Global Village host wrote the most detailed predictive book about the future of our planet? The New Earth is a book that drills down to specific events, many of which have already come true. But much more than severe weather patterns, seismic eruptions, the New Earth tells us how to prepare and understand how societies and governments will be forced to accommodate these future events. Originally published as The New Renaissance, the updated manuscript is one of Dr. Douglas Cottrell's best-selling books, Pole Shift, Coastal and Inland Changes, Volcanoes and Earthquakes, Rising Temperatures, Specific Landmass Changes, Healing Our Emotional Health During These Changes, and so much more. Go to DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com. That's DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com for immediate access to your printed copy of The New Earth.
Getting beaten up in life? Reading Conversations with the Akashic Field by Dr. Douglas James Cottrell coaches you through methods of battling fear and self-doubt to gain the spiritual strength you need for defense and stamina. Tapping into an ever-present source to help you win today. Visit DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com or Amazon today for Conversations with the Akashic Field.
For many years, clairvoyant seers have had the ability to peer into the Akashic field and see the library of information for every thought, deed, and action of souls living on the physical earth plane. One of four such individuals, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, trained under the direction of Ross Peterson, who, just like Edgar Cayce, was able to diagnose and provide guidance for physical and other problems encountered in daily life. One of Douglas's many books, The Complete New Age Health Guide, is a plentiful resource from thousands of clairvoyant readings. You'll learn how thought, emotion, and attitude influence your physical health, keys to anti-aging, the simple ways to a good life and diet, and so much more. Take a look at the New Age Health Guide. On sale now at DouglasJamesCottrell.com. You're listening to the Global Village Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host Doug Bentley. Tonight, author, poet, and musician Thomas Lane is discussing his first novel, The Karma Factor, exploring the boundaries of human consciousness in a story that takes the reader on a thrilling ride with character James Early as an NYPD detective who comes to the conclusion that he must end his life as a safe haven from his personal demons. Our guest, born and raised in Connecticut, Thomas Lane is a multidimensional artist drawn to spaces where art, spirit, and social justice intersect. He's also the author of The Artist Manifesto and a catalog of songs, poems, screenplays, novels, and paintings. He also founded the Helen Hudson Foundation, a charitable organization focused on social issues, including homelessness, racism, and the environment. Thomas Lane currently lives with his wife in Rhode Island, and you're invited tonight to call our show at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421 with your questions. Now, once again, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
And welcome back, everyone. We're having an insightful interview with a man that's a rising star, Thomas Lane, and his fictional book called The Karma Factor, a fascinating concept that Officer Early sets out to uncover the mysterious force that saved his life. And he finds out through this discovery that in his previous lifetimes, this has been part of a secret mission. This, I guess, was uncovered, Thomas, by your character, this Tibetan sage. Can you tell us a little more about that fascinating part of this monk and how he, I guess, was the focus or the critical mass for this discovery for Officer Early to find out where he was coming from and where he was going to, pardon the pun.
Yeah, happy to. By the way, I just want to say I was listening to that ad. You are quite the fellow. Oh my God, I had no idea. And all the Akashic Records stuff you were talking about, it's impressive.
Well, I've been doing this for 50 years, Thomas. So no
that's
worries.
Even more impressive.
You know, no worries. You know, it's okay.
No
Thank
worries.
You very much
I'm
for
impressed.
The compliment. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We're in this together, my friend. Paulden. So I had envisioned. Some of my heroes. Were Dalai Lama, Martin Luther King for another, Gandhi, but people of this ilk. And I had this idea of someone, of a monk, who was not really part of any traditional religion and practice, and he's sitting up in Tibet. This is the envisionment I have. He's up in Tibet, and he's following the news. This is 1946. As a matter of fact, I could read this letter because it all starts. The book starts, and he starts. The beginning of the book, there's something called the letter, and it goes like this. In the spring of 1946, a renegade Tibetan monk named Paulden sat at a small desk in front of a fire and penned a letter. There would be 32 in all, dispatched to locations around the world. The envelopes would appear mysteriously on doorsteps and in mailboxes, read by scientists and mystics, artists and poets, and philosophers. The message was simple. Humankind was on a path to self-destruction. In the not-too-distant future, life would become unsustainable. The cycle must be broken. The monk had chosen his moment. The war was over. Hitler had been defeated. But tomorrow another strongman would rise again, and the cycle of horrors would repeat over and over until the fragile ecosystems of life were destroyed and the miracle of Earth silenced forever. A new approach was called for, and the call was urgent. The letters asked the recipients to join Paulden in a quest for answers, to extract themselves from their current lives and travel in secrecy to a designated place in the Tibetan Himalayas. Here amidst the timeless skies and majestic peaks, there would be no distractions, no peer pressure, no preconceived ideas. The work would remain pure. Paulden's plea was impassioned. Western technology and Eastern thought must combine forces. Science and spirit must unite and enter the realm of the human soul. The mysterious phenomena of karma await scientific investigation. And here on the rooftop of the world, the answers could be found. On April 6, 1946, the letters were smuggled across the border into India and posted from there. 3 weeks later, the invitations began to arrive. And soon thereafter, a sampling of advanced thinkers from around the world began to quietly disappear. That's the letter. So, in my... I'm sorry, did you want to say something?
No, I said, wow, I just thought that was quite a letter. Go ahead.
Oh, well, that was the beginning. What if we really decided, just because, you know, we don't have the right solutions going, it's in my humble, and I don't know what they are, but I know that if we made a concerted effort and let go of all the fixed, you have to be a Catholic, you have to be a Buddhist, you have to be a this, you have to be a that, you should have gone to Harvard, or you should be, you know, just get people that are really sane and really advanced, and you put them together in an environment and let them at it. What is this thing called the soul, and concurrently, what is karma? And so this guy had this vision, this Paulden, this monk guy, and he got these people together, and in the secrecy in Tibet, they began working and studying and finding, and they have found, from there, they have found the Akashic records. And it wasn't just something that was in Hindu lore or something. It was a real, well, you know, Douglas knows better than I, but they are a real source of information, wisdom, etc. And what he wanted to be able to do was bring this wisdom, which is above the playing field, but it supersedes the current awareness level and the solutions to problems, but it resolves them from that level. And this is how we could transform Earth. And he uses James Early, who was part of that. He doesn't remember it initially, but he certainly does. He was part of that mission in a previous lifetime. So this is the whole setup, and then we don't even know the setup until later in the book, where it begins to be pronounced.
Hmm. Well, you know, I have some questions here that I've written down to ask you. And as I was about to ask you, you started talking about them. So you've nailed about six of these questions already. there's something going on here in the Akashic. I remember on Blog Talk here with the Global Village International Radio Show here. You're in Rhode Island, and I'm up here in Ontario, so here you go. You know, one of the questions was, you might have already answered, but can you share a little bit about your writing process? What, do you have a set routine, or do these things come to you in chapters, but, you know, like every so often? You said it took a long time, what, 20-something years to write this book, so the overnight success that took 20 years, I think, fits here. But do you have a set routine or a more spontaneous endeavor?
Well, the 27 years were not so much, they were partly, what was strange, I mean, truly strange for me, who was getting, you know, into this in the later part, not as a 20-year-old, but later. It started, the book started off in, what was it, 95, and I wrote a novella, and for some, and it's a long story, but this artist manifesto thing I wrote had gotten into the hands of Roseanne Barr and another Hollywood producer, and they were very excited about it all. But then I couldn't get a meeting with them. You know, I was trying to get them on board with that particular program. And then so I gave Roseanne's secretary something called the Karma Files. And they flipped out. They wanted to make it a TV show,
Wow,
and,
pretty good.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. It was just a novella. It was a draft. It was 70 pages. And so that whole thing started even before I wrote the novel. And then so many of the years were, and yes, I did fix it up. I tried this, I tried that. I couldn't get it published through Normal Lines. It was, I don't know what, it was hybrid. It was somewhere between a detective and a metaphysical thing, and that was not in the shelf space of their heads. So it didn't go anywhere. But the movie thing kept moving and moving, and then we had this producer and we got big names attached and it fell apart. This is what, and I kept going, well, you know, it'd be really great if that happened so I'd be able to pay for it and I'd get the book published myself. And so that was part of the drama of the 27 years. And I just got, after a while, I got, you know, this is my bad karma and I just need to take the bull by the horns and publish it. But the writing itself, I'm very fortunate. There's a stream that I can sort of tap into, and I can focus it towards color and painting and that kind of thing, or a poem, and I'll see something and I'll be inspired and I'll go, oh, that's a painting, or that's a poem, or that's a song. No, that's a book. That is a book. And I have a lot of intuition, and I don't have things analyzed, but I've done enough study about writing about, I don't know if you know Robert McKee and his work, but he's brilliant in terms of setting up storylines, et cetera. So I follow that, but it's a beautiful process. It's a practice for me. It inspires myself. Because it's intuitive and it comes out of me before I really know exactly what I'm saying, so it teaches me. It's like I'm one step ahead of myself, and I read what I've written, I'm going, oh, that's interesting. As if someone had written it. It's not like I'm channeling. I don't think so. But anyway, it's a very unusual process, and I'm very, very fortunate. It comes, and thank God.
Yeah, your book delves into multiple themes like spirituality and existentialism and justice. Was it challenging incorporating all these elements without overwhelming the core story?
Good question. I think because my process goes from stream of consciousness to sketches to, it's like writing a song where the first thing is just the emotionality of it, and then there's sort of chord changes, and then there's just a flow, a rhythm or something, and then it becomes more specified in terms of this chord should go into that chord, and finally I'll get the melody on top of that, and then after that I get the words. So it is. It goes from huge, just unfathomable emotion. I don't know where it comes from, insight stuff, and then it gets very, very refined as it goes through the process. And I do it without thinking, oh, now I need to refine it. It's just I go through it, and I go through it again, and I'll go through the manuscript. I just finished the screenplay. I must have gone through it 100 times, fixing this word, fixing that word. Throwing out what was the centerpiece of the chapter, suddenly losing its hold on the chapter, and there's another point on that same page. Oh, that should be the centerpiece. That takes over the whole thing. And I guess I listen well to my process. I know when to put music on to help me and inspire me, and when I needs to be quiet. You know, you learn these kind of things.
Well, you know, given the idea that you have a charitable organization as well, you know, the challenges you're facing while writing this novel and being multifaceted, you know, with your musical background. You know, how do the goals of your charitable foundation intersect with the themes you're exploring in your writing or your life, for that matter?
The trilogy of what drives me is the spirituality, spirit, art. I'm very much an art advocate. I think it's so important for artists right now to get their work up and out and you know, address these various issues that are coming and that are we need to wake up so many people. And the last thing is social justice, and it was very much about the racial thing for many, many years. The story behind the Helen Hudson Foundation is my mother, who was a relentless activist on so many things. She went marching for peace, and she wrote letters to prisoners, and she did recordings for the blind, and she also worked at soup kitchens. And while she was at soup kitchens, she was a published author on her own right. While she worked at soup kitchens, she interviewed the guests, and she'd set up her little tape recorder in a dustbin closet, I swear to God, and interview them and put them together in a manuscript called Dinner at Six, Voices from the Soup Kitchen, but her publisher didn't want to do it. So particularly myself in the family who had read the book, and it was very, very powerful, just these raw, unfiltered verbalization of these lives and the dignity that was still manifest there despite all kinds of hardship. And so I convinced everybody that we should publish it ourselves, and then rather than a commercial venture, we give the book away to soup kitchens, and they in turn could sell the books, give it away, do whatever they want with it, and they would keep all the money. My mom didn't want a penny. So this thing, and I took over sort of running the thing and ran with it for 20-something years now. And it's been a blessing in so many ways. And how it relates to the writing is that it's along with the ecology and the political situation and our threat to democracy right now, so many issues. There's also the homeless. And so I try to, you know, just do a little bit of everything. We actually have expanded the mission statement of the foundation because there's so many different causes right now that need help, not just the homeless. And so I just write checks periodically and go visit sometimes and find out if there's a way I can help them with something I've written or something I've done. So it fits into the trilogy perfectly, you know, of the arts and the spirit and social justice.
Wow. Now, what a wonderful idea. Your mom must have been, well, she not must have been, she was an amazing person. I could see
she
that,
was.
You know, in a little closet interviewing these raggy-tag kind of men and women, I guess, mostly men, and getting their stories that this was just, you know, gold. You know, where could you get raw, straightforward stories from people who are out there living on the street, so to speak. Wow,
right.
I really like that. Was a great idea, great concept.
Yeah.
And of course, your mother helping all these people just while she was doing the soup kitchen. What an effort! God bless her.
God bless her is right. And you know, she said to me, she died quite a few years ago, and she said to me at one point when she was quite fragile and quite losing it, she said that that book published was the best thing that ever happened in her life. And you can imagine how I get choked up just saying that. What a thing. What an amazing gift it was that she felt that way, and that this little, it really wasn't that much of a deal for me, but it was huge for her.
It's a legacy. It's an acknowledgement of her life of spiritual contribution, her good karma, if you will, but also the people who she interviewed. She made their life meaningful. And in some small way or big way, I'm sure they remembered her with fond memories all of their lives. Maybe she changed a few lives. Maybe those people
she might
were able
have.
To get
she
out
really
of their
might
their circumstance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have some people waiting in to talk to you. Let's take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back with more on the Karma Factor by the famous author Thomas Lane. We'll be right back after this.
The Douglas James Cockrell website is where you can learn much more about this amazing man and his journey through a lifetime of spiritual prophecy. The book Secrets of Life answers questions everyone has about the physical versus the spiritual world, why you are here in the world right now, karma, psychic abilities, reincarnation, prayer, and much more about universal laws. This book is essential for those who really desire to follow the path of the divine to soul perfection. Douglas has been chosen to provide you with a keen insight into the purpose of life's journey. Best-selling author Robert Appel says, "The least you can expect from Dr. Cottrell's work is that it will change your life." Go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and click on Shop for Secrets of Life and all of his books and learning materials.
You think about you and your family's health every minute, every day, not just when sick. We believe healthcare should bring results and rejuvenate the body. That's why Dr. Douglas James Cottrell compiled some of his best tips from his readings into a book, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Volume 1. From nutrition, anti-aging, and skincare to serious disorders and diseases like autism, PTSD, and cancer. Find out more at DouglasJamesCottrellStore.com or buy a copy on Amazon today.
Here's a little book packed with over 350 simple inspirational messages that you can use on a daily basis. It's called Gems of Wisdom. If you follow these simple steps to reach the divine within, you'll change not only yourself, but the world. A must-read for the spiritual-minded person. Available now at DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Gems of Wisdom. Every so often, an individual appears who can demonstrate the ability to access the dimension known as the Akashic Field. Dr. Douglas James Cottrell is one such individual. The field is like a celestial library of all our thoughts and actions since the dawn of time. Science is demonstrating that through this energetic field, our minds are connected to one another despite our perception that we're all separate. This is why the great religions of the world teach respect, compassion, and tolerance. They depict the field as the book of life, the source of inventions, inspiration, and insight. In the book, Conversations with the Akashic Field, Dr. Cottrell offers you practical advice from the Akashic Field so you may live a life of peace and prosperity. Go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and click on Shop. There you'll find books, meditation, and other spiritual advancement materials. You're listening to the Global Village International Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Call in and ask a question about tonight's topic at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421. Now, once again, here's Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
The Karma Factor flips the good versus evil theme on its side as it traverses the ages, interlacing past lives with present on a hero's quest for redemption. An officer, a city detective, is on an elusive serial killer's case with a visionary monk sequestered in an abandoned monastery in the Tibetan Himalayas. Who would have ever put the two of those together? Well, Thomas Lane did tonight, and we have some people standing by in the queue. To take your calls right now to talk to Thomas, Paul, who do we have that we can go to now who wants to ask Thomas a question on the subject tonight? Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Hello.
This is Carol from Chicago. I didn't know I was number one.
I guess you are.
Well, what I wanted to ask him is, what does he feel after writing your books? What do you feel that the audience should know? What is one thing that you feel that the audience should know about karma or consciousness or what you learned by writing those books? What do you feel the audience should know?
Oh, that's a great question. Thanks. I think that the takeaway that I have, you know, from my book, which is what I get from others, is there's something memorable about it because there is a piece of it that expands me. You know, if you read my book and the word karma, some people think it's just a bad thing. Oh, that's karma. Karma's good, bad. It's both. The fact that I'm getting noise here. Yeah, there you go. Okay. The fact that we need to have some sense of accountability when we do something that is not right, you know, and I think we tend to want to do that, but sometimes we don't feel like we have the courage or the right skills or whatever to handle that. But the need and the effectiveness of being accountable and confronting a situation that is not perhaps a good one that one may have created, and if this book can help that person just do it a little bit more and be a little bit more willing to confront the dark sides of themselves and others in a compassionate way, I would be thrilled. Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry. I got one last question.
Sure.
What would be your definition of consciousness?
Wow.
That's a deep question. It's deep.
Well, good for you. That's great. It's great you're thinking big. It's good. Consciousness is awareness. Consciousness is having the sense of self-awareness there's an animation that goes along with consciousness. There's a problem-solving aspect. It's that force. I'm no expert, but you can equate that to God. You can call it life force. You can call it consciousness. It is that which animates and brings into awareness that which is imbued with it, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. And did you find out, did you discover in your adventures, in writing this book, that there is one consciousness, or are there many?
In terms of there are many, but I feel that they come from the same gene pool, if you will, that there's a quality about it. We are all animated by it. We are different. We have our own karmas to figure out and things, but we are at the same time connected to something that is all-embracing and that connects us all together, which is the big consciousness.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
Great.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome. Hello?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I was just telling you that I got it.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, great. Thank you. I guess you hang up now, I guess. Hello? Hello? Hello?
I am here. This is a co-host. I'm not sure what has happened to Douglas. Let me just make an observation and ask you a question.
Yeah.
My opinion, my view is that God is the creator of the universe.
Yes.
God is the ultimate creator. And that, in a sense, all of our creativity comes from God. It can take there can be many media in which we express it. You know, writing, poetry, music, painting, art, etc. Look at that. And to a certain extent, it's a choice, you know, which medium we use. So the same creative inspiration can lead to multiple expressions. But in my view, since creativity does come from God, anytime I have experienced some sense of creativity, it's almost a spiritual sense. It's just like a gift.
Mm-hmm.
It just I have no intellectual understanding of where it comes from. It's just like a flash. Is this something that you have experienced?
Totally. You know, the word God is not quite, because it's got so many pictures in it, is a bearded man and this and that. I choose, it's the same beingness, shall we say, consciousness, and that I feel like the intuition that I experience, the mystery where these things come from, is from that source,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm just a vehicle from that source that comes through the Tom Lane-ness of it all, and there is choice of words, whatever, but I'm just a vehicle, and I'm responsible for making it a good book and choosing the right words and all that stuff, but it's coming from the big me, if you will.
Yes, that's so true, and so much of even in spiritual matters, healing. So you see great healers, spiritual healers,
mm-hmm.
and they describe themselves as vessels.
Yes.
I didn't heal. I am just the channel
right.
for this energy. And
right.
I've often thought about it in terms of creativity as well, but it's not intellectual, but there's a tremendous amount of emotional attachment to it. It's just my limited experience, It's not just a single thing. It's sort of has many, many different aspects to it when you experience it.
Totally. I love, from somebody I read, he said, we are the eyes and the ears of the creative process as just the expression that is finding new ways to express itself, and it's through each of us individually. It's from flowers, it's from, the whole nine yards, Mother Nature. What kind of creations do you do?
What kind?
Yeah, do you write, paint?
I do some writing and do some sketching. I mean, I also used to be a teacher. And
really?
In fact, it enters into teaching as well. When you're teaching, something just comes to you. Let's do it this way. And same with counseling. You just get a feel for what to say, And it's not, all of life is an art in a sense. How we live our lives is in a sense, an art.
Oh,
and
I totally agree.
It's not limited because it's part of who
yeah.
we are. And as I said, the channel can come in many different ways. It can come in the way in which you interact with people, the way you greet people.
I totally
agree.
All
things are part of the creative spirit.
I totally agree. As a matter of fact, I was going to just add that it's sort of arbitrary that they consider artists, the paintbrush, guitar, harmonica, computer, whatever. It's the quality and the thought that is in someone as a teacher, as you said, is an artist who does it. Someone who's a bricklayer, someone who's a restaurant, a fast order chef, if he does it in a way that has beauty and that thoughtfulness and that has care for others. And, it's all there. And we're all artists. I mean, that's the one thing that all the dear old humanity can do is create. I mean, we're always creating stuff, good, bad, or otherwise. And we are all artists. Totally.
And just to go off on a slight tangent.
Go for it.
One of the great creative aspects is having a child.
Oh,
and,
God,
and,
yes.
And, I mean, it's actually physical creation, a present from the man to the woman, and then for the woman to bring forth the birth. But that's when the greatest creativity comes.
Hmm.
Once the child is born.
Yeah.
It's
you
it's
have
unfortunate
kids, I
that you
it.
Don't, it means because in terms of creativity, this isn't just my view, that if you, it's like most things, if you don't use it, you lose it, but the more creative you are, the more that you open, I like to think of it as channels, the more that you open the channel, the more creativity you have.
I agree. It feeds itself. It's a self-feeding loop, yeah.
Yeah, we have to thank our mothers for that, right? If it wasn't for mothers, the world wouldn't be here. Good point, Tom. Okay, we've had a few numbers. I see some people flipping on and off here, Paul. I'm not sure if the platform is dropping people like me. But anyway, do we have who's next here? Paul, do we have somebody else standing by? We have quite a few people here in the 914. I think that's New York, 773. That sounds like Idaho, the 914 and Skype caller. So, Paul, are you able to press the buttons and see what we can come up with here? Great show tonight. The guest tonight is Thomas Lane, the Karma Factor. Paul? We have somebody in the 914 here. Hello, you're on the air. Can you hear me? You're on the air. Well, as I said earlier, Thomas, we have some issues with the platform here and pushing buttons.
Yeah.
Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. They're supposed to. Right now, my producer, Paul's, I can see his smoke coming out of his ears.
Yeah, I can see it from here, too. And I'm in Providence, Rhode Island.
All in good fun here. So as we were talking, thanks, Doug, for jumping in here. We're looking at, you know, the situation as you're writing this book. You've been spending a lot of time on it. I think somebody once said the only thing that can't be redesigned, something that's perfect, is an egg. It cannot be changed or altered, but everything else can be. And so your rewrites are a work of labor of love, no doubt. Moving forward from here with your book, is there, you know, can we expect to see a sequel to The Karma Factor?
I would love it. I have sketched out possibilities. We are still working on this movie deal, which is...
Tell us about the movie. What's up?
Back in 96 with Roseanne Barr got on, she wanted it to be a TV show. It didn't happen. So she left the project, and then I was... signed up, and then I wrote the book later. That was based on this novella, which is actually a comedy. It was Uncle Early, who was a sort of a Columbo-type character with the soul prince and the various things. But anyway, I guess it was around early 2000 where I actually wrote the novel. And since then, it has been almost, you know, we had some big names attached, which I won't go into. That fell through. I mean, getting a Hollywood deal is sort of like getting, you know, a few countries in alignment. The budget and the egos and the scheduling and the competition. I've been warned a million times. Stay away from Hollywood. They'll ruin your script. They'll ruin your life. And I have had a battle on my hands because I didn't like some of the adaptations, et cetera. But in any case, it's still alive, and it's, a fact, alive more than ever right now. And I really am working hard to get it to the next place. And I can't, unfortunately, I can't really talk about it because there's X number of people that are, we don't know where they are with this. But it has, so many people have read it and said, oh, my God, this has to be a movie because it's very visual. So I would love it to be a movie. If that happens, I'll be on that. If it doesn't, or if it's delayed, and if there's enough interest in The Karma Factor as a book, I would be happy. Because The Karma Factor is the setup book. It gives the backstory. It sets the scene. It introduces the character. And then I would love that chance to work on James Early's evolvement, spiritual evolvement, as he goes into this crime-ridden world and begins to exercise more and more capacity to deal with his stuff and to deal with his own demons.
Well, it makes sense to me. I mean, I can see this could go on and on, you know. I mean, the subject matter's enormous, and you're bringing it into, you know, everyday life. Although it's fiction, sounds to me it's based on maybe some of your personal experiences, maybe some of your wisdom and you're cloaking it into the activities of what's going on here. I think this could be, you know, more than one book, because again, the idea is good and evil, and
yeah,
always wins out, right? I'm eager to find out whatever happens to the good officer and how he settles his karmic debt, which has apparently been running from lifetime to lifetime. I'm not going to ask you to answer this, but how many lifetimes has Officer Early been building towards this one, you know?
You are a master of the Akashic Records. And,
well,
you know, when I first stumbled on to this whole concept of Akashic Records, it was, I understood it to be kind of like a library, kind of like, you know, a database of past lives. And I wrote because the thought that this would then become a profile, but a not just this lifetime profile, but in a profile of thousands and thousands of years, so that you could go back and find out what you had for breakfast in 1701 and who you killed in 403, you know, BC, and, you know, who you cheated on, and get to the heart of the crime, when it really happened, what this serial killer is caught in something from way past, and what Early is able to do once he gets into the Akashic Records is find out where this started, where he went through a spiritual trauma that kept him going back for more and more killings and formed his personality based on revenge and based on something crazy. And Early is able to, you know, find the source and help him through. And this is all based on the you know, understanding the soul and karma and stuff. So it's very, very rich area, and I would love to mine it for the rest of my life, actually.
Well, I think you can. From what you just said now, going back to the nugget, that first instance where something happened, action, reaction, consequences, and then, you know, karma is like making an onion sort of from the core out. You keep wrapping another layer of experiences around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until you get this great big, well, I was going to say juicy onion, but you get this big, and then you got to get down to the core again. So you have to take off all the leaves or all the layers all the way down again. So I think somewhere in your PR, I saw it was like an elevator going up and an elevator coming down, or you might have mentioned that to me before the show. Tell us a little more about that. I mean, what your thoughts are on that.
Absolutely. It's a treasure trove. I mean, this is why even in the movie where, you know, it's really hard to pin down, especially big names, to things that are half-baked and not fully thought through. But they were all so excited about this, what I call the Library of Souls, which is the Akashic Record. And just it's so, you know, why does a kid sleepwalk and end up in some spot, you know, 3 miles away? What's going on there? You know, why does someone cry every time she sees the color blue in association with a tree? I mean, these are things that are spawned from way back. There was one that I did, and this is just a little, when we were thinking more of doing TV shows, it was the crime was a KKK guy who was creating havoc in black neighborhoods and responsible for deaths, whatever. Burley gets a hold of his soul print, and then he finds out where the guy was in a previous lifetime. Turns out he was black, and that he did things that went in that lifetime that made him sort of crazily against blacks in the next lifetime. And what Early does is he finds out this character had a son in his past lifetime who's still alive, and he's black. And here's the black man turns to face this KKK guy and says, "Hi, I'm your son." Is that not poetry?
Poetic justice, absolutely. Yeah. Sounds like karma to me in the root cause. Wow.
Yeah.
So there are other such nuggets like this in your book. Where can people get it again?
You go to Amazon, Karma Factor by Thomas Lane. Hardcover right now. Do you have the copy of the book, or are you working from PDF?
Your agent gave me a PDF, but I tend not to read the book ahead of time because then I'm going to know too much, so I won't be able to ask you questions that I don't know the answers to.
Yeah,
so.
I love it. I mean, I was going to say I'll send you a hardcover if you want, but that's for later.
Please.
Give me your address. Oh, don't worry about it. Send me your address,
yeah,
and I'll
really
send, happily send you. But
thank you kindly.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
No, it wasn't really a question. It was more like I can see a lot of these things coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You were saying where can they get the book? Amazon, right. And then thomaslane.com. That's my website. I just decided to put everything in there with all kinds of different things. The book is there. There's write-ups and discussions about things that might find interesting.
Okay, well, let's take one more break. We have another about 10 minutes left in the show. And
okay.
I've seen some people, there have been several people come on, and they put their little hand up to ask a question, and then they disappeared. So if you're having troubles, please call in. We'll take your call right away so you don't have to wait. The number is 718-766-4421. Again, 718-766-4421. As soon as you call in, we'll take your call. We'll be right back after this short break.
Did you know that Dr. Douglas Cottrell has several other weekly channels where you can participate? Check out his Sunday International Spiritual Healing Service on Zoom, plus a Wednesday night Zoom community gathering. And you might also enjoy the Wake Up Podcast, exploring human consciousness, awareness, and intuition with Dr. Douglas and co-host Les Hubert. Just go to douglasjamescottrell.com and message us on the contact page to add your name to the Zoom links of your choice.
Who is God?
What's my purpose?
What do my dreams mean?
What are miracles?
What are spiritual abilities?
Was I in a past life?
Who is my soulmate?
What is meditation?
Are your thoughts racing around on what life is or how to live it? Slow down. Find answers in Dr. Douglas James Cottrell's book, Secrets of Life, now available at douglasjamescottrellstore.com or Amazon.
For many years, clairvoyant seers have had the ability to peer into the Akashic field and see the library of information for every thought, deed, and action of souls living on the physical earth plane.
One of four such individuals, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, trained under the direction of Ross Peterson, who, just like Edgar Cayce, was able to diagnose and provide guidance for physical and other problems encountered in daily life. One of Douglas's many books, The Complete New Age Health Guide, is a plentiful resource from thousands of clairvoyant readings. You'll learn how thought, emotion, and attitude influence your physical health, keys to anti-aging, the simple ways to a good life and diet, and so much more. Take a look at the New Age Health Guide. On sale now at DouglasJamesCottrell.com. You're listening to the Global Village Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host Doug Bentley. Tonight, author, poet, and musician Thomas Lane is discussing his first novel, The Karma Factor, exploring the boundaries of human consciousness in a story that takes the reader on a thrilling ride with character James Early as an NYPD detective who comes to the conclusion that he must end his life as a safe haven from his personal demons. Our guest, born and raised in Connecticut, Thomas Lane is a multidimensional artist drawn to spaces where art, spirit, and social justice intersect. He's also the author of The Artist Manifesto and a catalog of songs, poems, screenplays, novels, and paintings. He also founded the Helen Hudson Foundation, a charitable organization focused on social issues, including homelessness, racism, and the environment. Thomas Lane currently lives with his wife in Rhode Island, and you're invited tonight to call our show at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421 with your questions. Now, once again, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
And I want to thank everyone who's listening around the world in their time zones, listening to the archive version of the show tonight. Again, you can look for The Karma Factor online on Amazon, and I'm assuming it's in English, and so you might give Thomas a little nudge and say maybe Espanol, a little Francais, you know, maybe some editions coming up in different languages there, hint, hint, hint. But wherever you are around the world, we're grateful that you're listening to the show, and we thank you for your emails of encouragement and the suggested topics and individuals. We love your suggestions. And don't forget, we take your comments seriously, and we look forward to more of them. Email info@douglasjamescottrell.com, and we'll be more than pleased to consider what you send. I'm going to divert to Paul a little bit and say we've had a little bit of problem with the numbers here. We have some people standing by. Are they listening in, or should we roll the dice and see if they'd like to ask a question, Paul? I see Paul's mic open, but I can't hear you, Paul. So, okay. Well, we have a few minutes left. In summary,
sure.
Doug, do you have a question? Oh, is that Paul?
No, that was me.
Oh, okay. Douglas, you have a question for our good friend and guest tonight.
I just wondered, you write poetry. Have you published do you have any books of poetry?
I have published one book of poetry, very, very, very limited edition. But if you would like one, let me know, and I can send it to you.
It's found, but some of your poetry is found on your website. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's it's called Under the Written Word. There's poetry, and then there's sort of, I just sort of venture forth on various articles about, being an artist, being a man, what it's. I was at the March on Washington when I was a kid, with my mother, and there was a write up about that. Those kinds of things are there, and then there's music. I have a CD out, and I'm all over the place, let's face it.
You're a creative person.
Creativity is expanding. It's not limiting.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I just wondered, since you are a poet and a novelist and a painter and a musician, Have you thought of putting some music to the inspiration of the book, or some drawings or sketchings in the book, or some future book? Because it's all tied in together. It's all the same inspiration. It's just the medium that you use.
Well, it's interesting that you said that, because there's a character named Tracker, T-R-A-K-K-E-R, and that was the name of my band when I was out there playing, rock and roll band, and it had a whole branding thing. It was like, he's an outsider, he's a spiritual guy, you know, just the all themes that I carry forward. And when I decided to write The Karma Factor, I put him, Tracker, as one of the characters in the book. And he's this street musician who speaks in kind of spiritual fuzzy wuzzies, but he actually really makes sense. And he hears all the crosstalk from outer space and stuff like that. He's quite a character. And then I pulled him out of the book to do an album that is a story world, and it's called Hotel Earth, and it's by Tracker, T-R-A-K-K-E-R. It's on Spotify and all those various places. But there is a relationship between the story world and Tracker and The Karma Factor.
Okay.
Well, I wish you all success and further success with future novels and enterprises. I very much enjoyed talking with you.
I enjoyed talking to you, and I didn't finish the sentence, but you were talking about the artistry of bringing children into the world. You must have kids.
Yes, boy and a girl. But they're all grown up now. Even my grandchildren are growing up.
So. Oh, God. I have one of those, too.
Good. It's a blessing, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
thank you.
We don't have too much time left, Doug.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go to, since we're having a little trouble pushing buttons, I'm going to try my luck here. We're going to go to this 773 and say, hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Thomas, or are you just listening? Hello, you're on the air.
Are you talking to me, Dr. Cottrell?
Oh, hi, Carol. You already had a chance to talk, yes. I'm just going through the numbers here. We're having a little problem with the buttons as well. Thank you for being on the show, Carol. Okay.
Yes.
Putting Carol back on mute, and we're going to do another 773 area code and say, hopefully, hello, you're on the air. Did you have a question for Thomas?
I'm just listening.
Okay, great. Okay. Where are you listening in? Where from?
Chicago.
Okay. I hope you're enjoying the show.
Yes, great. I'm going to get the book.
Okay.
Great.
Right away. Okay, thank you.
I went to the University of Chicago. This is Tom speaking.
Okay, I've silenced the mic. We're going to go to a Skype call now and say, hello, you're on the air. Did you have a question? Well, just a second till. Hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Thomas, or just listening?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Thomas?
Yes, actually, I am actually going to purchase a book. I wish him all the best, because the Akashic Records are very popular right now from that particular angle. And given the fact that he's not only a poet and a musician, perhaps he could throw in a theme song and get the ball rolling. I mean, the writer's strike, hopefully this comes to an end soon. Dr. Cottrell, you might be able to ascertain as to when that may come about, and then things can get rolling.
Well, we do have some sound effect here. I mean, how about this one here? Let me try something. There we go. How's that?
That's pretty exciting.
Sorry, Paul, I jumped in there. Probably blew your ear.
That's a bit of more of a scary ghost. Definitely, I want to thank you for bringing on Mr. Lane. It's very interesting, and I will be purchasing the book. And Dr. Cottrell, I just want to thank you very much for bringing on some very interesting spiritual work, but also with a mundane twist. We do appreciate all of your...
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I'm grateful. Thank you very much. Thomas.
And thank you. This is Tom, and thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the book. I appreciate so much that you're living the kind of life that I think would be really powerful if I found out more about what you're up to.
Oh, okay. I am actually doing the Akashic Records as we speak. I have done a course in that, so it's still a work in progress. Very interesting area.
Indeed.
There's a lot in terms of his meditation. So
yeah.
I think in today's climate, we all need a little bit of peace and calm.
Yeah.
And hopefully come 2024, things will pick up, and I wish you all the best because I think you have a fabulous movie deal. And as the others, Douglas, I think, also said, I think you have a couple of sequels there to write.
Yeah, they're in the back burner, but they are edgy and interested in moving forward. So if I can get this version of the – by the way, you know, the Akashic Record is at the heartbeat of the book. It's called The Library of Souls.
Correct.
But it is the Akashic Records.
Yes, and of course we're under a current – the Mercury retrograde, which always affects Dr. Bell, which will be going direct more at the end of next week. We have a new moon in Virgo, so which will help that all along.
Yeah.
So hopefully for you too, that will be good news come October.
Should I be saying thank you to the stars that Mercury is going properly forward after next week and all these glitches are going to stop?
You're not the only one who's thought it's been kicked. Believe me, everybody I'm speaking to is having a rough time.
Would you believe this? I got a bat in my house.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. That was Mercury's retrograde speaking. We got rid of it. We're okay. But
yeah, just don't go batty.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much for a very interesting evening. And I wish you all the best and much success.
I'm very grateful for your comments. Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from New York.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you very much for your kind comments and your comments about the stars. I can hardly wait. I mean, Paul, the producer right now, he's nodding his head. Yes. It's over. Let's hope so.
Yay.
Okay. Well, we have a couple minutes left in the show. Thank you very much for being on here and your comments. I'm very, very grateful. Thank you very much.
God bless you.
God bless.
Peace and prosperity, everyone. Well, Thomas, it's been a delight to have you on the show, and we're just about to close the show. Again, one last time, where people can find you, find your book.
Go to my website, please. Thomas Lane, Thomaslane, .com, and there's just all kinds of stuff in there about the book, about the writing, I was told to be generous with the contents, and so I splurged. There's just tons of stuff in there, and I hope it's fun and entertaining, and I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a blast.
Well, you've been an excellent guest tonight, very informative. I love your style, your concept about a New York City cop meeting up with a monk's timeless vision, an assassin's revenge, a New York cop caught in the middle. That's the byline on the Karma Factor cover. I want to thank our producer, Paul Hughes, and our engineer, Jack Balick, who's standing by, my co-host, Doug Bentley, and all the wonderful guests tonight, including Carol from Chicago, who calls in with the most interesting questions. And for everyone out there, wherever you are in the world, I want to wish you peace and prosperity. This is a time of extremes. There are horrible times coming, but there are also times of enlightenment just around the corner. We'll be back next week with more exciting guests. And don't forget to go to my website, douglasjamescottrell.com, and fill in the email on the first page, top of the page, and you will be notified of our Global Village International Radio Show, and also our Zoom Global Village program coming up. Well, actually, there's already some progress in that direction, and we look forward to each and every one of you maybe sending us a note or letting us know about the show. Tell all your friends about it. You can go to my Facebook page, Douglas James Cottrell, and there we will have more information as well. Again, thank you very much, Thomas Lane, for being here tonight. The famous author, musician, talented painter, and creator extraordinaire. I'll stop for a title, Thomas. Take care. Mm. Good night, my friends. God bless.
Thank you.
See you next week.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Global Village Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindPro Publications and Productions, a division of Douglas James Cottrell & Associates, Incorporated. Copyright 2023, Douglas James Cottrell. No part of this broadcast audio may be reproduced in whole or in part without expressed written permission.